Ladies and gentlemen, we are traveling through time and space, landing on...
landing you on didn't warn me to be like that!
Professional, this is all pro, and he didn't last 3 seconds.
I made it 3 seconds.
It's over, we're tailspinning.
We're out of control.
We'll do it again, ready? We'll do it again.
Abort.
Hey guys,
and I'm going to laugh again.
Hey guys, keep this all in. Boring cast on the internet. We can't have any fun.
I'm not editing anything.
This is fantastic.
Everybody, it's episode 5 of The Lonely TARDIS, your guide to Time Lords and Space, the weekly, semi-weekly, usually weekly podcast devoted to all things Doctor Who, with a little bit of Torchwood sprinkled in for some peppa. I am Dally Domofsky, joining me as usual, Sean Norton.
Hello.
Steven Strom, don't call me Storm.
Truth.
And our companions this week, or are you Daleks? I'm not exactly sure what you guys are. Justin and Sydney McElroy.
Hi,
this is Justin. She was Sydney. And the first time someone says wibbly wobbly timey wimey, I'm out.
So I'm just going to mute my microphone then.
Oh man, it's so good that we didn't have Corey Roland on this episode.
Yeah, he kind of, did you read what he wrote on the,
Yes! Oh my God!
I hated everything we came up with. For those that are not up to date, we posted our last episode. We went over our favorite. I don't want to say our favorite, but really kind of the more pivotal Doctor Who episodes, the ones you kind of need to watch just to catch up on the show and get a feel for what the Doctor is all about. And Corey, who was our guest, I think on episode 2,
he was half a guest.
He was half a guest because I think he was half asleep the entire time.
Yeah.
Just laid into every single pick we made. So, sorry, Corey. I hope you go watch Fear Her over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Which one is that? Is that the Olympics one?
Yeah. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate that one.
Yeah, everybody
you knew.
That one.
You knew. You knew just by the title.
Justin knows what's up. Like, he knew to fear it. Like, he knew to fear her. Okay. I'm gonna sit back here and I'm gonna take
yeah.
Why don't you just put your beard back on and we'll get to
off to a rousing start. For
yes,
our here.
We actually it is gonna be a really good show because we are going to chat about the last two episodes that we have watched since our last set recording, which is which are The Girl Who Waited and The God Complex. Before we do that though, we'd like to get a feel for what our new guests each week. How they're kind of getting into Doctor Who, or how they've gotten into Doctor Who, and Justin was telling us just a second ago that he and Sydney kind of power watched the Doctor Who series.
Yeah, that's accurate. We actually started. I mean, years ago, probably back
more like a year ago.
No. Like we were back in the old apartment the first time we watched
it. Was it that long?
Yeah, we were back on Mora Road. So we watched the first season probably back in 07, I want to say. Maybe even earlier than that. It was not too long after it got started. And we watched the Eccleston season. And then we got in the very first Tennant episode, and we stopped for how long, Sid?
Until very recently.
Do you want to elaborate on why on how that happened?
Because I fear change.
Yeah, which is a weird show.
Well, that was the thing. I missed Christopher Eccleston so much, I couldn't watch anymore. I just had to stop. I couldn't handle it. And then... what happened. I don't know. It was sometime recently, a couple months ago, I said, hey, why don't we try that out again? And then it happened. I fell in love with David Tennant.
Yeah. So it was really David Tennant that took you from wanting to occasionally watch it to, like, mainlining it.
Being obsessed with it.
Yeah.
So was, when that change from Christopher Eccleston came came and went to David Tennant, did you guys feel like your doctor or the doctor that you got into the show with was gone and there was no reason to watch? Or because when that happened to me, because I started around this, you know, with that first season, and as soon as David Tennant came in, I'm like, wow, this is not the dude that I started to really get a good feel for.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that we really did the first watch the first season, and really, like, when Eccleston left, it was like, who, he's not the doctor. But the funny thing is, as much as I love David Tennant, I was actually kind of looking forward, by the next time that it happened, I was actually almost kind of looking forward to the new doctor, because it's like, I think I had sort of embraced that idea. And plus, Tennant goes through three companions in his three different seasons, so I think that was part of it. Like, you just have to get used to change. But I was actually more ready for it when Matt Smith took over than I think – even though I like David Tennant more than Eccleston, I think I was better – maybe better prepared for it.
You're getting over that. Go ahead. Sorry.
I think it was an easier adjustment just because I was used to by then what the structure of the show, and I knew it was going to happen. But it was still hard.
That last episode sucked. The last 10 episode, that one hurt. That one,
right?
That cut deep. And you got to understand, people, this wound is fresh for us. We've watched 30 episodes in the past 3 weeks. So, like, the loss of David Tennant is still very pronounced here at the McElroy household.
Yeah, we've had a couple of years to have our wounds heal. And even every now and then, they open up. I mean, you better be ready for them to just open up.
Every time they flash David Tennant's face on the screen for one of those moments, I can't help but choke up a little bit. It's really sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, Doctor Who is one of the only TV shows out there that consistently makes me, like, and I'm not too proud to admit this, consistently makes me cry from episode to episode. Not every single episode, like
every week.
Every week.
You can't hold it back.
I'm so dehydrated.
He's crying right now, actually, just thinking about it.
I've just got, you guys, I need a minute. No, I've got like an IV set up at every Saturday sitting there waiting for me. But seriously, like the show is really sad. Like I mentioned it last week on the episode, on the fourth episode, that Doomsday, when Rose leaves and he gets that one last chance to tell her he loves her and everything, and then there's like a, and then it just cuts out before he can say anything. It was just like that. I was in high school at the time, so it was already an emotional time for me, or an emotionally dead time, depending on which way you look at it.
Sorry.
And that really took me over the edge. And from then on, it's been tough.
Quick bit of trivia, what was the last thing that David Tennant's doctor said to Rose as he was walking away at the end of that episode?
At the end of Doomsday? Mm-hmm. Rose Tyler, I...
Nope. He just stopped with Rose.
Oh, really?
It was right after she had professed her love for him. So you automatically lose the trivia portion, which
I have later. I have a trivia for you, Dolly. What's the first word Doctor Who says in the reboot?
Oh, I know this.
Oh, I know this, too. Come on, Dolly.
Do it.
Fuck.
I watched this today. That's the only reason I know. If you guessed it, you would probably get it.
Hey.
No.
No.
I just watched the episode yesterday, and I can't remember what it was.
It's Run.
Oh, yeah. Run. That's right. Yeah.
Geez. Obviously.
That's what he says to, and it's a running, it's a running thing.
If you it's see the same thing he says to everyone. Sprint. Sprint in the opposite direction.
Power walk.
Dolly off to a great start there.
Yeah, luckily I'm not in the trivia. So
it's one of your favorite episodes.
It is, actually. It's the one that I listed that everybody seems to hate.
Yeah, I don't get that much either.
No, not hate. I don't see why people would hate it. It just doesn't – it's a rocky start. That's all.
I don't know if my lovely wife agrees with me on this. I personally feel like you should watch every episode.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No, like I think that you should start the very – like when people say, like, where's a good place to jump on? Like, you go back to Eccleston, because people are still they still make references to stuff that happened in the first season.
We have fought this battle uphill and down with everybody on the Twitters.
List you guys should make is the list of episodes you can skip, because I think that would be a more value. Like, because like I think you skip Fear Her.
Yeah,
I think you skip.
Gosh. You burn it and send it to hell.
By the way, that one.
I hate Fear Her.
Okay,
that's a good idea. Yeah.
Justin's onto something here.
Yeah.
But it's daunting, though. I mean, it's you can argue that it's daunting. I mean, especially when Matt Smith jumped in. There's never been more of a clean-cut chance in the past 5 years.
It is pretty good.
They make references, but it's pretty bubble. I mean, it's cool that they reference everything even back to the 60s, but it's more bubble now than it has been since it came back on.
Yeah, I mean, in the Rebel Flesh episode, he says, "Fancy a jelly baby," which is straight out of Fourth Doctor, and it was just like, oh, shit.
Oh, like, so good.
There's one in the first appearance of the Master. He offers his wife a jelly baby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, the jelly babies. I still want a scarf like that. I have begged girlfriends over the past like 5 years to make me a 10-foot scarf like David or like Tom Baker's, and surprisingly enough, that's probably why I have gone through so many girlfriends.
My mom knitted my dad one back in the like mid-80s, like because my dad was way into Doctor Who. We actually went and saw when we were in the 80s. I was probably like 8, 5 or 6. There was a tour that went around. It was the Doctor Who tour, and this was sort of in its heyday in America. And part of the tour was John Pertwee came and spoke at the university in Marco's, you know, in the basement of the student center. And then there was a traveling Doctor Who tour that was basically a giant trailer. And you went in through like a TARDIS, so it looked like, you know, it was bigger on the inside. But inside they had like a Dalek that you could like see. It was almost like a miniature museum, miniature Doctor Who museum that traveled around the country. And that's like my first sort of Doctor Who memory. So I have a place for Tom Baker. He's the one that I think is the best of the classic Doctors.
Yeah, that's kind of the general consensus, is everybody loves Tom Baker.
Cool. I felt special until you said that, but now I'm hearing a special connection between me and my dad, but it's all right. It's not a big deal.
That's what we do. We come on this podcast just to tear dreams down.
You know, it's actually an interesting story, and Justin's shared this many times before, but Justin, you were a time traveler at one point.
All right, you've got my attention.
That's the greatest lead-in of all time.
I had my own belt TARDIS. The hit film, The Time Belt, which I think is thetimebelt.tumblr.com. You can watch all the episodes. I'm not sure if that's the exact right address. You can maybe put it in the show notes.
He is sure that's the exact right address. He wants you
listen,
to watch.
You know what? When I was like 12 or 13, I was in a sci-fi one-off hour-long that was produced locally called The Time Belt, where like I traveled through West Virginia history at the age of I want to say like 12 or 13.
And what a rich history it is.
Boy. Oh, golly.
This sounds fantastic.
But as someone who has seen The Time Belt,
it's similar to Doctor Who because, you know, that started off as like more educational, you know, traveling through history and seeing historical events. Time Belt was sort of like that. I like to think that had Time Belt continued as a series, as a standalone series, I would have passed the belt along, maybe to regenerations of myself. I like maybe even cross paths with the Doctor.
I would have loved it. I would have loved to
crossover
see it.
Potential. There is legendary. Cross promotional ops through. Oh my god!
Oh yeah. The serial.
How different life would be.
They're just massive cheer, like off-brand Cheerios, like Oreos, but with time belt shape. Oh,
this has completely thrown me. Like my mojo is gone. I don't even. I want to know more about this.
That's got the hit TV actors Travis and Griffin McElroy as my friends that play outside with me, and it's got hit radio personality Clint McElroy as Uncle Walt. Who, for reasons that escape me, played my uncle.
Stellar cast.
Well, it is West Virginia.
That's everybody get for
careful.
Did they get everybody typecast get though?
What? Yeah. Well, yeah. We were just at the house, and they were filming at our house.
Just random strangers walk in with cameras. It's like, here, hold still, and let us take pictures of you.
Yeah, not too far.
We're gonna have to have somebody Photoshop a giant TARDIS on a belt on Justin.
Oh my god.
Shit. Someone actually cosplayed Grant, my friend Grant Kroegunk, cosplayed at the first PAX East as me in the Time Belt.
Oh, God.
That's a true ass story.
Oh, God, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty big moment for me.
I guess you could say it's timeless.
Jeez.
You cannot say that also. It's one of the options.
Oh, he totally caught me off guard with that one.
Yes.
We'll have to devote an entire episode to the Time Belt.
Oh, I was about to say, get ready for the Time Belt podcast.
Speaking of episodes, our esteemed guests, I know you guys powered through it. Are there standout episodes for you, or is it still so fresh that you just like in love with the whole experience? I mean, because we recently put these down. So
I think pretty – yeah, I don't think many. There were a few I really loved. I mean, like, there's the obvious ones, like Blink. I really loved the Vincent Van Gogh episode.
Yes.
I thought was
– Yes.
Was I was great. Talking about crying earlier. Yeah, there you go.
I like the ones that are high concept but are sort of metaphorical for something that doesn't really get you until I thought the Traffic Jam was a really good one.
Gridlock?
For like a gridlock, if you saw like the metaphor that was overlaid about how it's sort of a metaphor for Christianity, like I thought that one was really
did not pick up on Christianity at all.
So you think about we just watched Gridlock like a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And you sort of stumbled onto it first, so maybe you could elucidate.
Well, just kind of the idea that they get on the highway. Get on, and they're all headed somewhere, and there's a promise of something better, and then but they don't know where it is. They just know that if they just hold on and stay faithful, that they'll get there. And there's something below them that's terrifying and scary, but they just keep on, you know, with their eyes forward, heading forward, and they won't get eaten.
And there are people who are stuck and they don't get to go forward. Like, for instance, the gay couple is stuck in the race. They don't get to move
forward.
You
have to have a certain number of people in your car. And if you're your stereotypical wife, husband, and
if you have a nuclear family, basically able to procreate, you get to go into the fast lane. You get to get to the promised land. Everybody else who are like, you know, that homosexual, the single couple, there were others, right? There was an interracial couple.
There was an interracial couple
that was stuck in the gridlock too.
There was like an interspecies couple.
Yeah, it was an interspecies couple, exactly. And they were stuck in the gridlock, stuck in this sort of, you know, weren't allowed to move on to the promised land. And once
their kittens didn't even count.
Yeah, their kittens didn't even count. Yeah, exactly. So
was that Chris O'Dowd, by the way, from the
Yeah, it was.
Awesome.
Holy shit. Okay, Dolly, I'll be right back. I'm just gonna go reevaluate all of my Doctor Who fanfics now real quick. I'll be right back. I actually remember thinking of Gridlock as a pretty lackluster episode. Now that you say
too.
All this stuff, like,
me too.
Holy shit. And like, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm even picking up like, oh, and then you've got like the big giant face in the sky, and then and when they all get released, they all go floating upwards, and holy shit.
Man.
And the way that they keep everyone calm and together and you know, moving forward is the hour where they sing.
Yeah, they all sing hymns together.
It's a prayer. Mm-hmm. It's a hymn.
Oh, my God.
And at the end, they see the face of Bo.
So. Yeah, the face of Bo. Oh, God.
Oh, God, exactly. Indeed.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a Russell T. Davies treat.
I don't have
that a Russell T. Davies episode?
I know that like we have a lot of show notes to get to, but we, like, we don't have anybody else to talk Doctor Who, but so like...
Great, anytime.
This is why we do this.
The wife and I were talking about, I actually still prefer David Tennant to Matt Smith, but I think the storytelling is better in Matt Smith episodes. Mm-hmm. Do you agree? Are you on that same?
I think that's true. I think
I would say that's kind of a tribute to Stephen Moffat's ability to direct that whole course of the show better than Russell T. Davies does. Because if you look at Stephen Moffat, it just not only in Doctor Who, but in the other stuff he's done, like Sherlock and stuff like that, the guy is just a fantastic writer, and I would attribute a lot of that to him more than necessarily Matt Smith or David Tennant.
Would Basil Cumberbatch have been a dope that's not his first name. What's his first name? Cumberbatch is his last name. Sherlock. You know who I'm talking about.
I don't know his real name.
The guy who plays Sherlock. Do you think he would have been a good doctor?
Oh, shit. Oh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
People have said that, actually. Yeah.
His first name. It's going to bother me.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I just watched all the episodes of Sherlock last week, and yeah, I could see that. Yeah, he kind of has that
Benedict.
He has that kind of weird hair and kind of like.
That's what you need.
Weird hair.
Well, like they constantly talk about it on that show, hair of an idiot.
Fat Doctor Who. Dr. Chu.
Aww.
Dr. Chu. What will he eat next?
But to your question, Justin, absolutely. It's very more season-long oriented with kind of individual eps that are much less now than they used to be in terms of standalones, which it's interesting because as far as I know, all of us on here love it. I think we're all much more enamored with the storytelling now than we were in the Russell era. But if you go online, apparently there's a lot of criticism about it.
Really?
In terms of the season-long plots and River Song and taking the focus away from the Doctor and the companions. I mean, it might just be internet scuttlebutt, but it's very interesting to see those differing opinions out there.
I know Corey says, like, the lady who plays River Song is too old to be hot or something like that, but
Corey should be shot.
Monster. He's a
That's
monster.
That's not true.
He
That's
should be shot true. In the face and then into the sun.
The sun's getting a lot of work these days.
I think that it was a little easier. It was more of a stereotypical plot line with, I mean, David Tennant's Doctor became so entwined with Rose as a companion, and the whole kind of undercurrent of the love story became, I mean, and that's a very easy, traditional plot line for a story, for a TV show to fall into, and I think that was easy to latch on to. And you can't replicate that. That's not what it's about. And I think people probably keep looking for that to be replicated, and it's not supposed to be.
I think the biggest misstep they made with David Tennant was trying to replace Rose with someone else who could be a romantic interest and someone else who was interested in him romantically. I almost wish they had gone into Donna, who I actually prefer. She's my favorite companion.
Thank
still.
You. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I don't like Martha at all, actually.
No, they should have gone into Martha had some of the best stories. She had the Sherlock, the Shakespeare episode.
Shakespeare, Family of
Another one of my favorite. Yeah, that's another one of my favorite episodes. But like
Human Nature, Family of Blood. Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Which one? Family of Blood is...
That's when he turns human. He turns
when
human.
He turns human.
He's hiding out. But then there's that nice twist at the end where he was being merciful.
I know. Yeah. This show makes me cry.
No, he was merciless. Not merciful, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was trying to show mercy and give them a chance and...
And then they were psychos. I liked – one thing I liked about that show so much was that they didn't have any crazy superpowers and whatnot. They were just straight up – they looked normal. I mean, I know they were possessed by aliens and shit, but they looked normal. But they were just like sociopathic murderers and whatnot. And that I thought that was kind of – I thought that was scarier than most of the monsters they have on the show.
So, Justin, you mentioned –
Well,
No, I was going to say you mentioned about the storytelling being really kind of important in this season and even the previous season. And we had talked in a previous episode about how it seems like these last couple seasons have been geared towards a little bit of a different audience. They do have a younger cast now. And it's – I don't want to say it's like the Twilight crowd, but it's definitely a crowd that maybe appreciates a longer story arc and likes to really get invested in the characters rather than kind of the monster of the day type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. I don't think they are as good at – the one thing that I thought that they were great at, and I told Sydney this in the Russell T. Davies era, was they were so good at bringing on someone who you didn't care about at the beginning of the episode, who their death would be heart-wrenching by the end of like 48 minutes. And I don't think they're as good at that now. I don't think that that is as much of a strength. I think the – it's a much more cohesive universe now, and I think that that's sort of the strength of this. Is like, you know, I think that the Devil's Run was a good example of that. How drawing in a bunch of different threads was the way it happened, rather than a bunch of standalone, because they drew in, you know, the different people that owe the Doctor favors.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I think I know what you're talking about, falling in love with people in 49 minutes. Like, Sally Sparrow and Elton John are two of my favorite characters from that show, but I don't give two shits about, like, the little kid from I totally blanked on the name of the latest episode that we all thought was meh.
That Who was Elton John?
He was from Love and Monsters with Moaning Myrtle from Harry Potter with the Zorbaloth.
Oh, yeah. That was a great one.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It got on my best of list. But those are the episodes that, ironically, it's the episodes that have the least amount of the Doctor that make you fall in love with the characters, the other characters, the most. Well, which maybe that's not ironic, but
more room. Yeah, I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I just don't, these standalone episodes, I just don't care about the new characters that we meet that we know we'll probably not see again for a long time afterwards. But Sally Sparrow, I could go back and watch Blink right now and just totally fall in love with that episode all over again. I'm never not in the mood to watch Blink, but that's just me.
No, I agree with you completely. I could watch that anytime. I think for me too, a lot of, in Doctor Who, and Justin and I have talked about this before, that I think we're supposed to be kind of viewing humanity through the eyes of the Doctor a lot of the time. And I think with David Tennant's Doctor, who so loved humans, I think it was easier to love the new cast members on each episode through his eyes.
And roast into glasses.
His Doctor doesn't have respect for humans. He does, certainly, but I don't think it's the same. I think that's a big shift for me in the Doctor.
Can we all just take a second to see what I did there? Rose tinted glasses.
Oh,
that was good. I wrote it down in my journal, so I didn't remember.
I just straight up ignored it.
Yeah, same. That's cool. We just kind of blocked you out.
Right now.
What I didn't know is I've been muted this entire episode.
You know, it's interesting. I can't think of a character that I've gotten invested in that hasn't been a recurring one this season, but this past week, and I know we'll get into it, I kind of like the med student. I thought that they did enough in a very short amount of time where it was kind of like, you know, until things got bad. I was kind of like, well, this is, could be a lot of fun, but we'll get to that.
Other than that,
I agree with you guys. Episode.
And bear in mind, you did just refer to her as the med student. Like, you couldn't have cared about her that much.
Well, you don't hold that against me. I'm terrible with names to begin with. I don't even know who you are, so that's not the personal, man. I love you to death, and I can't remember your name.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is that why you didn't get me a birthday present?
Yes.
I'm just saying, it was my birthday was on Thursday, and I got, like, one present.
And as an aside, as a little doctor, we're just known as the med student for 4 years solid. So
yeah, see, how about that? Back off, man. I know what I'm talking about.
Well, let's move on to talking about
Dolly. Get control, man.
Yeah,
get
these
control
last yourself. Couple episodes, because otherwise Steve is going to keep going off on tangents and we'll get lost somewhere. we did have a couple of really big episodes these last couple weeks. Well written, I might add, but that's just my opinion. The Girl Who Waited and the God Complex. So let's get into The Girl Who Waited and kind of quickly run over the synopsis and then kind of take it from there on our thoughts about it. So in this episode in particular, the Doctor takes Rory and Amy to, I think it was Appalachia. Thinking it's
haven't
like a
they mentioned that. Haven't they mentioned that planet in previous episodes? That name sounds super familiar now that we actually say it.
I think they have. I think they have mentioned it. It's supposed to be like a holiday destination, Wikipedia tells me. But actually, the planet is suffering from a fatal plague, Chen 7. And so the denizens of this planet, I think they're called the Handbots, is what at one point Amy calls them, basically lock these people up into rooms and these sections and kind of sterilize them, so to speak. And so time and space gets, I won't say wibbly wobbly, but I almost did, and I think I just time streams tend to get bent very quickly and overlap, and Amy actually ages quite a bit of time. I think it was like 46 years or so, and she waits the entire time for Rory and the Doctor to save her. To them, again, it's just a few minutes or maybe an hour, but for Amy, it's been several decades. And so kind of the big overall point of the episode is, will Rory want to save this older Amy, or does he want to rescue the younger, you know, kind of reverse time on itself and rescue the younger Amy with a kind of a surprising twist at the end, I might say. So that's kind of the overall general synopsis. What do you guys think? What are your kind of general thoughts? Let's start with Sean. You've you mentioned a couple things to me over on Twitter, so I'm just kind of curious to get your thoughts about this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's – I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. You know, it's – to me, it's everything that I look for in Doctor Who. And I thought that the twist at the end was a nice touch showcasing it's kind of growing, this little darker side of the Doctor, I think. And I especially loved Rory's breakdown and yelling at him and saying that, you know, you're turning me into you. A very nice touch. I don't even know. I'm kind of at a loss. I feel like I should have more prepared, but I guess I'll go and I'll react to everybody else. But I loved it. I really did. And I thought it was just wonderfully done from start to finish. I thought it was a nice contrast to everything that's happened with Rory, and it really kind of put the spotlight back on Amy, which I thought had been, not you know, lacking a little bit. And I thought she did a great job, especially as an actress, handling both parts, old, current and future. I thought it was fantastic. And I'm not going to lie, even though supposedly she never existed, my heart broke. I mean, my heart broke at the end of the episode and seeing what came to be and everything. So I thought it was great.
So, you know, we can go ahead and spoiler it, since if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have seen it. Again, Rory chooses the young Amy. Actually, he chooses both of them, but the Doctor locks out the young Amy, or the older Amy, from entering the TARDIS. And she ends up, I guess, dying or never existing, I think would be the correct terminology. But yeah, it was kind of a deep episode. Again, you were right, the focus really falls on kind of an Amy-centric episode. But you know what I found really interesting was how Rory suddenly got his balls back again, so to say. You mentioned the part about him yelling at the Doctor and saying, you're turning me into you. And I think that theme, again, plays into the next episode we'll talk about. But it was definitely the Doctor kind of screwing up in just being around these people. He's caused someone that they love to disappear off the face of the universe.
I mean, it really does play on the very foundation of his relationship with Amy Pond, who waited 12 years in the very beginning, which clearly has shaped her into who she grew up to be. And now it took so long that we got a glimpse of an Amy that is a complete 180 from what we know, you know, and what we see every week.
And she's kind of vengeful.
I can't even imagine what happened to teach her how to use swords and do all that other crazy stuff she was doing. And man, was she broken. I mean, she was so broken. I mean, she didn't even care about Rory. It took most of the episode to turn her, you know, to kind of snap her out of that haze of being on her own for 30-something years. And then she took – another thing I liked, I really loved that she took a lot of the phrases that she used with affection for the Doctor and kind of turned them and made them much more poisonous when she referred to him and talked about how badly he had just messed her up by the I won't say wibbly wobbly, but by all the time stuff that went wrong. So
the next sound you hear is going to be Justin slamming his headset on the ground.
Yeah. Disgusted.
You know what was kind of interesting was the giant magnifying glass, or the window, I guess, that let them see between the different time spans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. I thought you had more to say on that.
No, I thought it was really I thought it was an interesting prop. No, it was again, it's the whole through the looking glass. And we've seen that in a few other episodes throughout Doctor Who. It's kind of a recurring thing every time Stephen Moffat gets involved, but it's this whole idea of peering into, and maybe this is me getting really deep, but it's looking into people's lives. And the Doctor, I kind of see the Doctor as the Mad Hatter. He does wear fez, and he leads these people on these just really weird and wacky adventures, and they tend to get hurt. And Amy,
what version of Alice in Wonderland were you reading where the Mad Hatter had a fez?
The good one, apparently. No, but in this case, I kind of see Amy as Alice, and I will not say Rory is a rabbit or anything, or an Ace of Spades card.
Continue your belabored metaphor. Yeah. Sydney actually said something really interesting about this episode, and if it had been set in a different, with a different set of people.
Oh, I think, I had made the comment that I think it was interesting to see the Doctor at the end lock older Amy out of the TARDIS, because I think another Doctor would not have locked older Rose out of the TARDIS. Oh. So quickly. I think it was a very different.
I totally agree. I think that this Doctor can never have the relationship with Amy Pond, that he can never care about her as much as he cared about Rose. Okay, with Rory in the picture, he just can't have the same relationship. I mean, it's always going to be a much more pragmatic. David Tennant / Eccleston would have moved heaven and earth to save Rose. Like, there's that great moment in it, as much as I disliked, you know, the one episode where there was the people getting sucked into the TVs?
Oh, the Idiot's Lantern?
Yeah, Idiot's Lantern, thank you. There was that great moment where they took Rose's face and left her in an alley, and he said, like, well, this makes everything very simple, because now there's no force on heaven and earth that can stop me. And, like, Matt Smith and Amy Pond are never going to have that relationship.
Well, yeah, and you said with Rory in the picture, not to mention not just Rory, but with River Song coming up, closing in on the time when they have that relationship after they have their first kiss and everything. Now they're getting more and more involved, and I like the way you put that too. He would have moved heaven and earth to do it. Like, he blew up a sun in season 2 to say goodbye to Rose. Like, yeah,
he murdered billions of people.
he basically caused Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan just to say goodbye.
Oh, you know, I think I'm going to have to play devil's advocate here a little bit. I think he does have a very special relationship with her. Obviously, it's nothing like the Rose one, but that is different. I mean, he hasn't been the same since Rose, and that was, I don't know, three, four years for us, and like God only knows, 100 years for him. And that's fine, and I think they're very close. I think there's two other things to keep in mind, though, at least in terms of the mythos of the show. One of which is that the whole paradox thing, if he had tried to save her and two existed, you know, and the universe would have exploded. I think that's kind of a big deal, at least in the sci-fi terms of it, and that she couldn't exist. And the other thing is that he wasn't really killing anybody because she wasn't going to exist in the first place. And I think that's what really pulls at me as a viewer, because those 36 years that she was there and it was awful and it really, really just turned her core of her person into somebody different. To him, it's just like, well, never happened, so don't really have to move heaven and earth because my Amy, or if it had been years ago, my Rose is right there and she's never going to go through this anyway, so it's not a big deal. So I can see he is a little bit darker now, but I don't necessarily see this as the end all be all that it could have been with somebody else, just because to him the way he sees the universe, nothing's really changed anyway, and everything that went bad is never going to happen. So
sure, I think that's okay. True, and I think it really does highlight kind of how alien the Doctor can be, because of him. And they say that again in the episode over and over again, is that because of him she was in this situation. Amy was there, she blames it on the Doctor, and it is only, what is that? It is only because of the Doctor, sorry, that there was the option for them to go back and redo things differently. I think Rory would have adapted, even as with Amy older than him and the way she was, he would have accepted her just like that. He was just happy to have her back. But the Doctor then gives him another impossible choice and gives him the option to undo it all. And that's not something that, you know, as humans, our hearts are ripped out.
You make a really good point, Sean, though, that he is not going to have, nor should he, have another relationship with someone like he had with Rose.
No.
Like, I think his relationship with Amy Pond is much more parental, sort of by definition, just because Rory's in the picture. I think that you're right in that her presence, Rose's presence, is sort of the everybody else has to be seen through that lens. I mean, everybody else, she was that perfect combination of, like, lover but also companion but also, you know, tourist who wanted to see everything, plus someone who could bring her own sort of humanity to it. Yeah. And everybody else is going to be seen through that lens.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. And I think No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. The way, Justin, you said parental there, that actually makes me kind of think of one thing. Did you kind of mean that he's kind of a like a father figure to those two?
I think that he has taken that on to a degree after, like, post the Pandorica, after the Pandorica. Okay. I think before that it was much closer to a pseudo-romantic relationship.
Because I would almost say that he – that, like, Amy and Rory almost act like a kind of parental figures to him in some ways because he's so immature sometimes.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And yet they – like, he's so immature and so inexperienced in sort of the – you know, with when he's talking to River and stuff like that and inexperienced in the ways of love and whatnot. But they are sort of moved on with their lives and at a more stable point in their relationships around him and whatnot, kind of constantly reminding him that it's not just about having adventure and being going on adventures and having fun and all that stuff, that there is – that sometimes you just have to have a real – you have to acknowledge that – you have a real life at the same time too, and real responsibilities.
Yeah, but,
yeah.
It's interesting, especially now that we're recording after the last two episodes. So we kind of have a little bit of hindsight behind us because of what happens at the end of the most recent episode in terms of their relationship. But it's interesting because it keeps evolving. Because you know, he kind of crashed into her life. Supposedly, who knows? The TARDIS may have taken him there or whatever. And then he winds up taking her out. But then at the end of season 5, he mentions that he took her because her house was too big. And it was clearly something was wrong. And she was the solution to what was going on in the universe and all that stuff. But I liked that Moffat from the very beginning. He played with that. And he played with the pseudo-romantic thing that got really tired with Martha and everything after Rose. And then he completely put the nail in that coffin with Rory and everything else. And what we've gotten in lieu of that has been such a fantastic for lack of a better word, three-way relationship, but it's really been growing over the past two seasons into really kind of finally putting the spotlight on Rory and Amy and just what an epic couple they are, because they're just fantastic and something we really haven't seen since the reboot. We've never had a dynamic like that before, which is great. And then going back to this episode in particular, what I've really liked and what really pulled me is that, yeah, Rory would have done anything to save her, but it really got to him because he was just so adamant on growing old with her. And so he was furious because that was taken away from him. Mm-hmm. You know, 30 years later, she had all that time, and it was at the time he didn't think he was going to get any of that. And that really pulled at the heartstrings.
We'll get at this, I'm sure, when we start talking about the next episode, but I almost wish the end of the most recent episode had been at the end of The Girl Who Waited, because I think it would have been a much more believable ending to – I think it would have been a much more believable reaction from Rory. And maybe we were just getting like a delayed response, but
partially, I think apparently we talked about last week or the week before, some of these episodes are kind of played out of order. They were written in a different order than they're actually being played in, so that might part of that.
I think it was just the two, actually. I think they just did a swap with the pirate episode and then whatever the Night Terrors, was that what it was? The cabinet episode. I think those were the only two that were swapped.
Okay. Well, I just thought that might have been in some kind of explanation, but, you know, I was wrong. Okay. you have empirical proof that I'm incorrect.
I don't. I could be wrong, but that's –
I don't think those two could have been swapped because the pirates appear in the Devil's Run, so it would have had to have been before that.
Yeah.
It's still there. That's not a hard thing to do, though. I mean, if they have to go back and reshoot it, that's a 30-second, you know, like, oh, hey, the ship is ours. They weren't in anything else that episode. They were in one corridor for 5 seconds.
They just kind of appear in a doorway.
It's like, oh, sup?
Hey,
ship.
Remember
See
me?
Maybe that was fucking Mickey or something originally. Hey, remember how I couldn't go through dimensions? I figured it out yet again. I know you said you closed that shit, but I reopened it. Mickey. Again.
I'm pretty sure Mickey is in this dimension though, isn't he? Because he's married. He married Martha.
Yeah, he's chilling with Martha Jones.
Okay, so he is in this dimension.
Yeah, because he married Martha Jones. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Fighting Earth aliens and Suntarans.
Which, am I the only person who think that's just a little bit? Maybe this is me just being a weird Mr. Western white guy, but like, isn't it a little bit weird?
That's why exactly what Sydney said.
I said the same thing.
Oh, okay. Well, they have these that they marry off the only two black characters in the entire show.
That's what I said. I expected more of the British, honestly.
Yeah, that was a little bit weird.
I've never gotten a chance to voice.
Was already engaged to a doctor.
To another guy. Yeah.
Another guy.
To a white doctor. Or to a whitish. Or I don't know. He was
whitish.
I think he had like an Indian last name, but he looked pretty damn white.
He was eggshell.
It was fair. Well, yeah, it was a especially because Mickey's like Mickey Stoops, like Mickey, who, let's be honest, the only thing he ever did right was like get a gun. Like, it's all fine.
Oh, come on.
Maybe it was just.
I like that story with his grandmother, though.
Maybe it was. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's it.
Oh. I was gonna say maybe it was just coincidence of two characters who were written, especially Mickey, just so poorly. That, like, it was, it, like, Mickey was just such a, just, like, he wasn't even the tin dog. He was just, like, that's one of the reasons why I never liked Rose as much as everybody else did, because I just saw her as such a word I'll avoid saying, but,
I think that it has less to do with race and more to do with they want to put
it's
these.
It's just like a bow on it. Like, oh, well, you got nothing to do and you've been screwed over by everybody.
And you're with her and you guys, please never come back.
Yeah, that's it. See, happy end.
I thought
Torchwood
Mickey
kids.
Was going to end up with Torchwood. Like, because at the end of like the end of season three, doesn't Jack like run off into the distance and go try to talk to Mickey? Because that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, they all leave together. Yeah, him, Martha, and Mickey.
Yeah, he was like, "Hey, Mickey, I got something to tell you," or something like that. "Hey, Mickey."
I think that was
I wrote a song about you.
"Hey, yeah, Mickey, I got something to tell you."
That's super ironic that you brought up, or maybe not ironic, but a coincidence. I don't know. I write for a living, goddammit, but I should know this. Words. that it's a coincidence that you bring up the Italian, "Hey, Mickey," because Jack was fucking an Italian guy in Torchwood.
Whose
name was not Mickey because it was some Italian name.
Billy noted.
What? Did we discuss enough? I mean, did we kind of?
I kind of wanted to say one thing about the episode, or two things really. Was that I wanted to say that from the perspective of somebody who is not only single, but like single as shit. the episode was a little bit weird to me because I don't know if I was. Everybody talks about how much they love the episode, but I just don't know if I could perfectly empathize with it just because of like the whole. I don't
ask girls to make you scarves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We already established that.
Could be because you're dead inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you guys want to move on then? Mm-hmm. Is this the end?
No, I understand that. Like, I get that. I think that if yeah, for sure.
It's not just this episode. It's some of the other episodes too. Like having those two characters in love and everything. Like when it's such a serious relationship between them, I'm having more and more trouble as they become more and more mature with between themselves. Empathizing because I've never really had anything like that, so it's all kind of alien territory to me. That being said, I did feel the impact when basically it gets to the end and it's just like the doctor's like, "Okay, I just promised you I'd save everyone. Oh, by the way, let me make you an accessory to your wife's murder." You know, it was pretty jarring, but I don't know.
No,
I'm happy
you're right in that. I think that it is. I think that their relationship at the point it's at now has become incongruous with sort of the spirit of the series. And I think that that's probably part and parcel with why God Complex ended the way it did.
Yeah, maybe. I think you're right on that. But I feel I'm going to see Amy and Rory again really soon is the other thing. But I just, I don't know. Yeah. Like as I go along, I'm having more and more trouble. Because everybody loves a good romance, like a good by the seat of your pants romance kind of thing. Like, I love the Doctor and River Song together, but I'm just having such a hard time comprehending all of the different nuances between Amy and Rory and, like, really
feeling for them more and more.
You know why? One of the reasons that may be is because they've accelerated the span of their relationship from, you know, Amy kind of being in she was basically a stripogram and she had a boyfriend who she was engaged to, but they didn't really make a big deal about that in the first few episodes. But then you see them get married, you see the puppy dog love for a few episodes, then they start getting a little more serious, then Rory kind of puts pants on for a bit, and then now that there's this really mature portion, just like any other good relationship, I guess. You get to that point where you're so comfortable with the other person now that you see Rory and you see Amy, now they're comfortable kind of going off on their own and doing their own thing throughout the episode. They're not tied to each other like they were early on. So I think that maybe that's something. Maybe it's just moving too fast for you, Steve.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it is moving too fast. I think if I had more experience with like longer running, more mature relationships, it would maybe make more sense to me. Maybe I would be able to tie into it. But I don't want to get too heavy here and talk about my I don't want to get on yet another tangent about my personal life. But maybe one day I'll be able to go back and look at these episodes and really go, oh, like I see why they, you know, blah, blah, blah. So,
well, yeah, that's all. I think it's important to remember that. I mean, I think the you're looking at Rory and the doctor initially with Amy and you're thinking, God, the doctor is so much cooler than
I know.
Rory. But then
Wait,
Rory, Rory waits 2,000 years for her.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's the moment. I mean, and from the female perspective here, that when a guy waits 2,000 years for you, it doesn't matter if he has a bow tie on or not.
Well,
I mean, he's your guy.
Speaking as someone who's more of an average Justin, who has been maybe let's say compared to the doctor quite a bit over the past few months, maybe I was sort of in Rory's corner, like, I don't know. I kind of like that guy. He's a human and doesn't do anything cool. I kind of like the regular guy. I don't know. You compare him to the doctor. It's hard to say.
He talks like that when he's not on podcast. I don't know
if you know that. Oh, man. And actually,
hey, Sydney, pass the salt. Also, where are my pants?
That's his real voice.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. Actually, that's another hard part for me too, is watching Rory, like watching the moments where, in Let's Kill Hitler, especially where Amy totally, cause I've known girls like Amy, but I am definitely nobody's Rory. But like the moment where she's like, I can't date him cause he's gay. He's like, I'm not gay. It's like, yes, you are. And stuff like that, because I've had moments, not necessarily where I thought I was gay, but like moments of totally like, oh, this would be the, if this was a Doctor Who, this would totally be the moment where they would, where this girl would realize that she was actually in love with me the whole time, and then nope.
I was going to say, based on your criteria for a second there, I was going to be like, I was definitely somebody's Rory then, Jesus.
No, yeah, then it just ends. Like, that's where the relationship ends with me and that girl.
It's funny that beyond the... What, I'm sorry, sweetheart. You were going to say something.
Nothing.
It sounded like it was about to be positive because you're patting my leg. I'm hoping it's going to be something positive about me, so I'm just going to roll right into it.
Well, I was just going to say you were my Rory at one point.
Oh, I was her Rory at one point.
And by that, I mean I thought you may have been gay.
There it is. Yep.
Cool.
That's what I meant.
We met in theater.
That's true. I think that...
Oh, well, then, of course.
It's funny. You know, that thing with the Centurion, I don't think is just a... It's obviously a grand romantic gesture, but it's also significant in it. It is the one thing, it's the one sacrifice that the doctor would never make. In a million years, the doctor would never do that for somebody.
To wait.
Never stand still, yeah.
Never stand still, never wait for somebody. Would never, ever, 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 ever happen.
Huh.
He didn't even want Rory to do it. That's how antithetical it is to the doctor's persona.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, basically the entire guy's existence is based on the concept of running. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a really cool, like, damn, Justin, write a book or something. Like, get on that.
I only get more to talk to Sydney, and then I just steal things that she says.
Okay, Sydney, write a book. You become more famous than Justin.
So I think we probably beat the girl who ate it to death, so to speak.
That'll teach her.
Wait.
Metaphorically speaking. It again.
You made me do this.
This is easily the best and worst show we've ever done.
Probably. We've had some good racism today. We've had some good...
incredibly inappropriate.
I'm waiting for the anti-Semitism to pop in.
Oh, don't get me started on Let's Kill Hitler.
Yeah.
The sanctum.
So, I actually need more wine, so you guys just go for it. I'll leave you definitely. With Sydney.
Uh-oh. That's a bad sign.
Hurry back.
Hey. I would like... Considering how everything Sydney says is apparently way smarter than anything we say, I would like to hear Sydney talk more, actually, because she's kind of become the Rory of this – not the Rory, the Corey of this group.
Just talk about random things and make us smarter.
Oh, I don't think
– like dummies.
Well, I don't
– And it's easier to say when there's not – there's this big microphone right in front of me, and I'm not used to that.
Wait, you use microphones?
Justin has this thing. I don't know.
Look at the professionalism you guys bring to this show.
I don't even know where he got it.
I just scream at my laptop. I open records.
I'm laying on the floor in my fucking dorm room with with an iPad in my lap. Like, I'm as low rent as it gets. Other than the fact that I just announced that I'm using like a $650 piece of equipment.
I'm pretty sure Dolly just starts the show and then leaves it for 2 hours. He's like, oh, you guys done yet? Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's not a bad thing. I'm just saying the level of professionalism is second to none now that the McElroys are in the house.
I didn't even know he had this thing in his office. He keeps the cave shut in here. But there's
He's got his little man cave.
Oh, yeah. There's several computers. There's a mini fridge.
It's like he's done this before. Like he's been
action figures
or something.
And this was the day that Sydney McElroy realized what her husband does for a living.
Came to her on the Doctor Who podcast. The podcast when we talked.
Occasionally, when I'm home for 5 minutes, I hear him talking in here, but I don't know what he's doing.
He's probably playing with his action figures. Is what he's doing.
You guys have any Doctor Who action figures yet?
I just got a Doctor Who poster framed.
Oh. Not you, Steven. Quiet.
Shut up.
Justin got me a David Tennant doctor.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yes.
Whoa, I stood up and now I'm echoing all over the place.
Yeah, he's on my desk.
Well, just wait until the trivia portion is all I'm going to say.
Oh.
Because there's some good prizes.
I still haven't... Okay, it's so Dolly mail. Gave... Oh, yeah, I know it's in the mail, but I still haven't got it yet. It's been weeks, but like Dolly sent me... I won a trivia thing, and Dolly sent me a... adipose stress reliever, and I'm still waiting on that. I really want that thing because that is so cool. But at the same time, I'm realizing, oh shit, my room is starting to fill up with so much Doctor Who stuff that I'm kind of getting scared for my prospects of ever finding an Amy.
No, don't worry about that. Justin's room was filled with toys and posters and
time belts.
Steven, are you in time theater? Belt. Because if you're not in theater, we know where you can go.
Oh, yeah. I work at a newspaper.
Apparently that's
that helps.
No, journalism. I don't know.
You don't know about
no money
that.
In that.
There's
it's
no
okay.
Money in that.
I mean, Justin accepted my love of Archie comic books, so I can take his toys.
Oh, okay.
She maybe put them all in the box in the attic. So
that sounds win-win-win. I mean, where does it get bad? Archie, Doctor Who, theater, what?
I should probably mention that my Doctor Who, my giant ass Doctor Who framed poster that my dad framed for me the other day for my 21st birthday is the size of me, and it is sitting right next to my Hellgast edition Killzone 3 helmet and my stack of New 52 DC comics. So
Chick magnet.
Are you also massively overweight?
I'm reeling them in. Well, I'm a what?
I said, are you also, you know, morbidly overweight? Because that would be just
actually no.
Package.
According to the last girl that rejected me, I'm gangly as fuck. Those are exact.
Hey, girl, better than morbidly obese though. So
yeah.
Always.
Anyway,
actually,
sounds like Justin's back.
That's
okay. Hey, how are you? Is this still the show?
It's still the show.
We sidetracked a little bit, but I think we're back on course here.
Yeah, right. We were just talking about the big thing in Sydney's face, so.
The microphone?
Microphone, sorry.
I told him I didn't even know this was in here. I didn't know you had this thing.
Serious business.
Apparently,
it's like,
he other podcast.
Did I was going to say, it's like you've done this before.
Yeah. Well, he is on maybe what, like, he's on the, what, two or three podcasts, you know, but he spends enough time just talking into that microphone when it's not plugged into anything to do maybe another five.
Well, he's always telling me that he's really big on the internet, but I didn't know if he was, so.
Big enough.
It's a God complex.
It's
not how big you are on the internet. It's how you podcast about Doctor Who.
Yeah, that was smooth, Steve.
Great job, Steve. Let's move on to the God complex.
So is intermission over, guys? Should we keep going into part two?
So the God complex.
All right.
Okay. Another complex. Interesting episode where the TARDIS travels to kind of a weird building or locale, I guess you'd call it. In this case, it's a it looks like kind of an earlier mid-80s hotel.
Well, they literally say it's an 80s era hotel.
And they bump into a few other folks there who explain to them that the different rooms in this hotel, which are laid out like some are hotel rooms, some are kitchens, some are dining rooms, some are barber shops. I think one was a diner. They're laid out. They're meant to be your worst fears. So whatever your worst fear is, there's a room for you in this complex. They come to find out actually that the place, which is run by a Minotaur, alien beast.
Actually, it's pronounced Minotaur.
Minotaur from Minot.
Which was a first for me. But okay, sorry, go ahead.
That's right. Steven is definitely not going to find an Amy anytime soon now.
Womp womp.
There's an Amy out there for Steven. You guys leave him alone.
Leave Steven alone.
Maybe you can find a Donna.
Now you're talking.
Find a Martha.
Yeah, now you're cooking with gas.
Maybe I should remark that like redheads are my kryptonite. I think I've talked about this on several podcasts in the past, but I do like red hair. Tangent.
So the God complex.
We need a soundboard.
Thank you. Just help me out,
I'm
Justin.
Putting that into your eHarmony right now.
We need a soundboard every time I go off on a tangent and don't realize it. You just hit like the sound of like I don't know the TARDIS cloister bell or some shit.
Yeah, absolutely. You hanging up on him on the Skype call.
So
okay, I'm sorry.
The Minotaur eventually starts to kill off people one by one. It thrives on their faith. So the more faith they have in something, that's what the Minotaur, I guess, Minotaur.
I'm not calling it that.
Yeah, Minotaur. That's what I'm saying.
That's what they call it in the episode.
In America.
It's to survive. And so they're also British, so they have an accent, Stephen.
Do they have an accent, or do we have the accent?
Jesus.
Ooh.
He's unstoppable tonight. What's going on?
He's accumulating too much power.
Eventually the Minotaur kills off everybody except for Dr. Rory, Amy, and Gibbous, who's just bizarre little creature.
I love Gibbous.
Yeah. And they come to find out that it's not about fear, it's about faith. So the thing that you have the most faith in is what the Minotaur is after. And the shocking twist in the end is the doctor basically telling Amy that the Minotaur is actually here for you, not for the rest of us, and you've been waiting all this time for me. You've had your faith in me, and that's why the Minotaur has been hunting you. And so he leaves them on Earth to go do their own thing. He's kind of, I guess, kind of done with them. He basically says a really good line where he says, "I don't want to stand over you." Referencing he doesn't want them to die because of something that he did. So that's the episode in a nutshell. The doctor is off on his own now, supposedly.
For a little while at least. I mean, I gotta imagine eventually he'll pick up another companion.
So before we get too far, there are two themes that I wanted to just quickly touch on that I noticed. The words the God complex has a bunch of different meanings. It's this. Someone's scratching their beard with their iPad again.
Oh, shit. Okay, I just remembered where the microphone is on my iPad, and I've been, like, thumbing it across absentmindedly, like, this entire time. I'm sorry.
And so the guy, the complex, which is this hotel, the Minotaur having a kind of god complex. And then I think at one point Rita, who is the med student, I think you referred to her, Steven. The med student says...
No, that was Sean.
Okay, Sean. Oh, it says...
Stop taking my credit.
basically tells the doctor, you have a god complex. And so I thought that was really, really kind of an interesting play on words. And then the whole idea, again, of waiting. And the doctor brings up that Amy waited for him all those years because she had faith in him. And it was time to stop waiting and time for her to move on.
Yeah. Did you want us to take turns or
just whatever you want to do? I'm done. I'm hanging up. Just talk.
That's it. He'll see us at the end.
Trivia. Who wants to win this poster or something? No. Well, I can start since I'm talking now.
Some might say you have already started.
Yeah, I guess it's already going.
It's been going.
Okay, so this episode was actually written by Toby Whitehouse, which I saw at the beginning of the episode, which was pretty interesting to me as a fan of Being Human, the British version. I haven't seen much of the American version, but the Being Human is a show about three different people, a werewolf, a ghost, and a vampire all living in the house together in England. And I thought that was kind of – he was kind of playing to his strengths in this episode with shoving a lot of very, very different people from different cultures and whatnot. Rita specifically – they specifically go out of their way to mention that she is a Muslim, which felt a little ham-handed in the way that they delivered it. Just – I don't know. Just in that way that they – it almost felt to me like they made her a Muslim just to say that they had a Muslim in the episode. Just the way that she said, like kind of jokingly, don't be afraid and whatnot. It felt a little like it was trying to hit all the notes, kind of going through the motions. But I thought it was a pretty good episode overall. I thought it was definitely creepy, and I – was definitely able to I definitely liked that. What I really liked about the episode was, like, what I was kind of talking about earlier was that it was a lot of different people going in a lot of different directions, and you got to see deep dark parts of them that really mattered to them. You know, it set up a very interesting way of showing deep dark parts of people in a very small amount of time. I'm done. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that it was very good at that. I thought it was very good at letting us into the personal lives of these small characters that we weren't going to get to see much of because they were all going to die at the end, except for Gebbis. Gebbis, I actually thought, was very Terry Pratchett, if anybody's read Discworld. He kind of reminded me of a Terry Pratchett kind of character with the resistance is exhausting.
I know what you're saying, though. We really by showing us what they were most afraid of – you saw, like, straight to the core of them, which made them, like, you felt like you really knew them in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, all you had to do was
walk into the room. It was a very accessible narrative device to show you about these characters in a very quick.
Exactly. I think I'm just maybe getting kind of talked out, but yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to get at. It was a very clever plot device for doing that. And even for – and because of that, we got to see into the parts of the people that – into the companions and into the doctor, bits of them that we had already known, but the doctor and each – that the characters themselves maybe didn't know about each other, like the doctor finding out that Amy basically worshipped him as a kind of – not necessarily a godlike figure, but she put more faith into him than she probably should have. More than was probably healthy for her to put into him.
But that's his fault.
Yeah,
it's always his fault.
And that's I mean, especially with Matt Smith, and we saw it leading up to A Good Man Goes to War, where he kind of was confronted with the fact that this kind of his legend and his reputation has grown to such a thing where people think he's a warrior and everything. And it's been hinted that he would fall lower than he ever had. And a lot of people thought that had already happened, but I kind of see it as one of the subplots that's been going on through the season. And I think this episode was a really big culmination of that, because this is kind of like a super confident, like, I don't even know what I'm doing, but I'll figure it out, Doctor. You just kind of hang with me. You trust me. It'll all go great. And this totally blew up in his face. I mean, he was watching people die all around him, and it was entirely his fault.
Right.
you know, it's like, especially, oh, it feeds on fear, so just have all your faith in me. And then halfway through, it's like, oh, boy, it feeds on faith. Crap.
Oh, and just before you move on from that little topic there, Dolly mentioned it, I think, in like episode two of the, or a few episodes ago, that this doctor, more than any other doctor before, is like seems to be the most fallible. Like,
yeah.
He's just flat out wrong half the time.
Yep. No, and it's funny, but it's true. It's really true, and that's a recurring thing. And I think what we've seen here is a complete shattering of that, you know, that confidence and that mythos and all of that. I mean, and now it's left to the bare bones thing. It's like, I told you to do all this stuff, and I'm wrong. And, you know, I told you, you know, why I took you, and I lied about that, and I've lied about all this other stuff. And in reality, I'm just a vain old man who's desperate for attention, and it's going to get you killed. Like, that's what he does. And it sucks because we want to see him as this hero and everything, but the way it's written now in the character, he's just a screw-up. and, you know, it was mentioned towards the end of the Russell T. Davies Tenet era where, you know, Davos was kind of pointing out, like, look at all these – your children of time. You've turned them into weapons. Like, these are your soldiers in your little war here. And then we got a montage of everybody who died for him. And now it's kind of another side of that dark coin where he's responsible for these other deaths just because he's so overwhelmingly, like, I guess cocky. Cocky or overconfident or smug or whatever. I really – it's interesting to see too. I mean, I can't remember the last time he evicted anybody from the TARDIS. Like, he's just like, all right, you're done. Like, get out. Like, I'm not going to stand over your grave. And he just sent them on their way. I'm sure – I know we haven't seen the last of them, but he gets it. And I feel like we kind of saw that psyche kind of break down, and he's just like, I'm not going to do it again. I've done it in the past. Everybody dies around me. You know, I'm going to send you on your way, a house, a car, and that's it.
Yeah, and like you said with Davros, not only Davros, lots of different villains over the past – like it's been a kind of building up and building up since the beginning of this new revised series have been telling him constantly over and over again that he keeps screwing up people's lives. Not even villains necessarily either, but Elizabeth Sladen's character, Sarah Jane, she was even kind of saying like you kind of screw things up a lot. Like you screw us over constantly, and he even admits that sometimes. But I think this is the first time with him dropping them off like that. That he's not only just admitting it out loud, but he's kind of coming to terms with it and actually acting on it. Like, it's really easy to say that he's a screw-up all the time, but to have him actually act on it and actively go to do something that will cause him some distress, because obviously he's lonely and he doesn't want to be alone all the time, to actually do that, I think it's kind of marks a bit more growth in the character that I think kind of mirrors the growth between Amy and Rory that I was talking about earlier. Like, as they got more mature, I think he is suddenly becoming more mature in the way that he handles his affairs now. At least he's trying to be, but doesn't necessarily know how all the time.
It's the first time you get the sense that he's done something right.
Right.
That he hasn't screwed up something. He said, you know, I mean, this is it. This is for you guys. And yeah. I mean,
sure. Well, and I think I don't think that he has – that anybody has still fully recognized the fact that he really messed things up for Amy and Rory in the sense that they didn't raise their child.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't feel – yeah, I don't feel like that's been fully recognized yet.
Oh, thank God.
He was talking about that a lot.
It's driving me crazy.
But you know what?
Why aren't they angrier? Why aren't they more –
beautiful red jaguar.
Yeah, I got you a car because I stole your baby.
Right, because your baby grew up without you and became a psychopathic murderer, and you'll never see her again. Or well, you will, but you already did, and you know.
I mentioned this when he brought that up, though. I'm wondering if the fact that they don't care more about the fact that they didn't get to raise their child maybe stems from the fact that they didn't even know she was for absolutely certain that she was pregnant until the last second, that she maybe didn't like it, but maybe because of the fact that her pregnancy kind of caught her by surprise there.
They didn't have as much of a connection.
They didn't have as much of a connection, or even then that maybe she hasn't had time to process the fact, like she hasn't had time to process the fact of just the enormity of what has happened to her life and what has changed in her life.
And that could be it, because they did. I mean, they held that baby, and I can't imagine that at that moment some they didn't connection. At least feel the.
You know, you mentioned how this doctor has an independent streak. You know, it's very much about like I'm going to figure everything out, and et cetera, et cetera. Sydney has a fascinating theory that maybe we shouldn't give to you now, but maybe we should force you to come back and have us back for another episode. Baby, tell them what your the theory of like the doctor's like the preeminent thing that defines the doctor's character.
You keep putting me on the spot.
No, this is a fair. I think if you believe this and buy into this, it is hugely informative for the rest of the
series. I spend a way too much time thinking about this kind of thing. First of all, but
you're not the only one.
What it came down to for me, what we've talked about before over a few beers and a glass of wine, is that I think the regeneration of the doctor, the new persona of the doctor, his values, his rights and wrongs, are largely dependent on the circumstances in which he regenerated and what happened immediately before. And that's kind of where I think it comes from with the David Tennant doctor, who was regenerated out of basically a sacrifice from Rose, endangering her life, humanity, endangering itself to save the doctor. And then we come to the Matt Smith doctor, who right before he regenerated, basically went around and saw that everybody was doing fine without him.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then is kind of a little more removed from.
So the Matt Smith doctor is more distant from humanity. He doesn't have that love of humanity because he was born of basically everybody being okay without him there.
Like, and they've said the Christopher Eccleston doctor was, before the series started, born of
he was blood born of war.
Warfare.
He was
born of war. Yeah, I was just about to say that in season four, he said like this. David Tennant says about his like cloned self to Rose, like, yeah, this is me when you first met me. This is me born in battle and blood and all that stuff and rage and whatnot. So I totally buy into that. That makes absolute sense to me. That's really smart.
Thanks.
Are you done buttering up?
Yeah, I'm done. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a really good theory, and it's one you don't hear. I've never heard that before. So I like it.
Are you not going to talk shit about Sean going on and on and on and on, are you, Deli?
Well, you're the one going on and on and on right now.
I said two sentences.
Things got really hostile.
That was the joke.
But back to the – I assume
you caused discord. I'm sorry.
McElroy's come on and we all stab each other. I don't know what's going on here.
Back to
unless you have any more to say about that, I'd like to go back to that whole – child thing or lack thereof.
Yeah, and like what the hell, point? Guys?
I mean, their baby. And I'm holding out for the next, well, I guess the last episode, because I'm pretty sure there's no Amy and Rory next week, but I'm holding out that it's kind of explained and that maybe I really hope there's not a reset button, like, hey, the universe rebooted, or hey, the Earth got moved because 9 people flew the TARDIS or whatever. I'm hoping that. We've got enough pilots. We can move entire planets. Whatever. I'm hoping that there's some remotely logical explanation, and maybe some wibbly stuff happens in the last, the season finale, and maybe they do wind up kind of rewriting time a little bit, and then they do get to raise their baby. I'm hoping that that's kind of what it is, because right now this whole like, hey, if you see our daughter, tell her to pop in and say hi thing isn't really flying. It's not flying.
Man, okay, I'm really starting to consider the concept that maybe I am just dead inside, because, like, I don't see any of this, like, emotional attachment. Like, maybe not dead inside, but, like, I'm putting I'm putting far more stock into my theory that maybe I just am too young to really fully appreciate the experiences that a lot of these characters are going through and stuff, because I just turned 21 on Thursday, like, and
yeah,
I...
So Justin's 906.
yeah, Justin knows what's up.
The other theory, there's another theory that, I don't know if it's popular or not, but there's a theory that the silence may be messing with their heads a little bit. Supposedly, if you go back and watch Let's Kill Hitler, you can hear something that sounds like there may have been some silence going on in the room.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which
that sounds feasible.
Like, I would love it.
They've done that many seasons.
I would love it. Like, yeah, like they don't really notice River and they're not really upset because their memories have kind of been messed with. I'm fine with that. Like, give me something that
will make me feel like it all makes sense at the end. Because right now, I mean, it's just – it's not even a plot hole. It's just – it's just doesn't make any sense. It's so huge. It's so huge. And
my hope for after they wrap the arc with the River Song arc, presumably that will wrap at the end of this season. I really hope that whatever they do next season is not so time-centric, because I – you know, Shaw, you said – you know, I think you were probably half-joking, but you said wibbly-wobbly time stuff. And, like, I feel like that's been far too convenient a sort of narrative device. Like, no. It's like this is time travel. Like, it all worked out in the time travel. And that was I hope it's more grounded.
Right.
That was a big criticism.
Not as Bill and Ted, Sydney. Yeah.
That was a big criticism.
I left the keys here. I went back and left the keys here. It's all good.
Yeah,
that was
right.
A whole Pandora opens up.
Yeah, that was a big criticism in the Big Bang when he stole the Vortex Manipulator and got himself out of trouble and got everybody else out of trouble. Like, it's a stretch. And if you use it as a crutch, then – That kind of really weakens the overall.
Well, yeah, I mean, like at Amy's wedding, like, I remember you, so you exist again. Like,
I choose to not even acknowledge that he's just back. That's all I care about. I don't do this wishy-washy fairy tale crap.
You guys talk about that, but like, am I the only one who was a little bit miffed at the season 3 finale where they basically I do believe in fairies the doctor back to health, like,
oh no, that was terrible when he tapped into the satellite system and floated all Jesus like
in him so hard that he existed. Hey, listen, if believing in the doctor would make him exist, I would have made it happen already.
Like, this very
like Sydney and I would have pulled the doctor into our living room.
Yeah, that's.
I was about to say, the very existence of this podcast would have like dropped a TARDIS into the heart of America right now. Like, it would be over.
It's interesting because there's a lot of stuff that they could be playing with and doing more with, like all the hints last season that Amy had the whole universe flowing through her head and stuff, and had that kind of mental power that made her different. And they haven't touched on any of it. They haven't touched on any of that, which I think is kind of – I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on, obviously, but they had a lot of potential to do some really cool stuff. And instead, it's just like, well, I remember you, so come dance at my wedding, you know?
That's sort of notorious for that. Like, how about the fact that Doctor Who's daughter is cruising around the galaxy somewhere and everyone has conveniently decided that she does not exist?
Oh, shit. That happens all the time in Doctor Who. Like – I know you guys don't watch Torchwood, but like in the first season of Doctor Who, there's this huge plot point about Jack's backstory, about how he's missing like 3 years of his life. They have never once mentioned that in the entirety of the 4 seasons of Torchwood.
It's coming.
People ask about the Doctor's daughter
all the time, Jenny.
And so she is kind of. Oh God, that is terrible. You're right.
She's for the longest time, I thought she was River Song, and I thought, wow, this would have been horrible, horribly.
Oh yeah, that
would have
been fucked up.
that would have been scary.
I'd love to see like River Song's next incarnation be that.
Your kisses are familiar. Is that what you just said?
I don't.
No. I think they just throw these things out there, and then they can always just pick them back up later if they want to. It's like just little.
If you need someone to swoop in and save somebody lines. At some point.
You guys remember when they had like every fearsome enemy ever like just show up and trap them in that thing? Hey, that's kind of a thing that happened. Did we know why?
Yeah, really. Where did those guys go? Like after they put him in the device, they just said like, did they like, all just Dalek turn to each other?
With Cybermen.
Yeah, I was about to say I was about to say, did they all just like turn to each other and say, well, do you guys want to go get a beer now?
Cyber high five.
This episode did leave, I think, a luscious little tidbit out there, which was, what was in the doctor's room?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
and what does he have faith in?
Right. So you faintly hear the cloister ball of the TARDIS.
Oh, it's not faint.
Yeah, it's not faint, yeah. His words are actually pretty interesting, because he says, "Oh yeah, who else would it have been?
Yeah, of course. Who else?
Of course, who else?
So you think? So you think it was just what was his fear?
himself.
The Cloister Bell, if you don't know it, for the listeners, is the dome noise that happens in the TARDIS whenever there's like
the breaking danger. Noise.
No, it's the like, danger boom, kind of like things boom. Are going bad. Noise.
It sounds gong being
hit. Oh, okay.
It's the noise it made in the beginning of Series 5 when it was kind of rebuilding itself. Yeah. And then it made that noise again when the master kind of reworked it and made it a Paradox machine and all that stuff.
Also, in the Doctor Who 1980s television movie. Now, I'm not going down that road. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
1996, thank you.
Oh, 1996, was it?
Yeah, man.
That explains why Paul McGann looks so young on Luther. I was kind of amazed by that. Anyway, go ahead.
Trivia. But no, I mean, it's. I think if you look at stuff like the Dream Lord episode, I think the only thing he fears is himself.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see that too, but at the same time, I'm like, if that's what it really is, I'm going to be major disappointed, because that seems like a little bit of a cop-outy answer to me, maybe.
Because he's also been called, I mean, with the Pandorica, the most feared thing in the universe. We've already kind of set that out there.
But
that's not his fear, you know?
That kind of goes part and parcel with my main problem with this episode, in that I felt like, and this is just for me, and maybe we'll have it explained later, because a lot of times in Doctor Who, when I have problems with something, it turns out to be they fill it in at a later date. But
yeah.
I thought that this episode, the way it ended was the Doctor, you know, didn't want to watch them die or what have you and drop them off. And I really felt like with this specific premise, there was a great opportunity for them to show what that was and really make that believable. And I thought that by not showing what was in Rory's room or Amy's room or the doctor's room, they really missed a trick by showing you something really deep, dark that would have explained the whole ending.
Well, did Rory have a room?
Rory had no faith.
And right. Amy's room was her waiting for the doctor.
Yeah, Amy's room was 7-year-old Amy.
Right. And I think they could have used the doctor's room in that episode to explain the two of them getting dropped off. And I didn't really believe it because it was all sort of like very sudden. Like, hey, I'm giving you a car and a house, but I've got a dip. I don't have money. I didn't have enough money to buy chips at the end of the second episode of the first season, but I have enough money to buy a bunch of house and a car, but I can't travel with you anymore.
Man, those interest rates, when you...
They're just killing me.
Yeah. Whoa, did I lose somebody?
No, we're still here.
Oh, okay. Suddenly, like the normal like sort of white noise in my headset just dropped out of nowhere, and I thought I'd lost out.
I think it's the white noise in your head.
Oh, okay.
It's the loneliness
or the silence.
It's the silence. Yes, it's the silence in the library. It's the Fashta Narada. I totally forgot what I was talking about now. Sorry. Go ahead, guys. Thank you. Welcome for that little moment. Sean, are you still here?
Sean's gone.
That's what happened.
That explains why we're quieter. Well, I mean, if anything else about the God complex that you guys want to touch on?
Oh, I just this isn't really something I want to touch on, but like I think for my money,
it anyways.
Yeah. Wait, no. Well, no, it's not something I really have any like major crazy thoughts towards. Maybe because I don't even understand it very well myself. That line that Rita says that "Let me be robbed of my faith in." Private, is that just like, well, A, isn't that just like the scariest goddamn thing that's the scariest goddamn thing I've ever heard anybody say on TV?
And, it is pretty horrifying.
It's ghoulish. Yeah, yeah. It's worse than death. Really.
Yes.
And B, in England, they still market this as a kid's show. I want to like tell I want to make sure everybody remembers realizes this. There's like the English version of Sesame Street, and this are like buddies, like the blue Willie Steamboat or whatever it's called. It's some weird show in England that's been running for a billion years. Like advertises this as a kid's show every fucking Saturday morning for
they
kids.
They watch Naughty and then they watch this.
Yes, and then after I heard Rita say that line, I was just like, man, the English really hate their kids. Like
they kids.
British kids are scary though, right? They're all brick in the wall, you know, scary, rising up.
Yeah, all of England is actually just a Pink Floyd video.
That's my perception. Is that wrong?
No, I think it's pretty accurate.
Sean's back.
There he is. There's the air. Dead air.
All right. Well,
did I leave? I don't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you were missing.
You're gone.
But I do want to say one thing.
Oh God, what'd I miss?
And now it's time for trivia, trivia, trivia. Care of the I Am a Dalek app for the iPhone. It is trivia time, gentlemen and lady. We're going to get into some awesome Doctor Who trivia, and the prize this week, which I'm going to drop into the Skype chat here. I mentioned before the show that it kind of ties in a lot of the memes that we know of quite well. It is a pair of the 11th Doctor crash set. They're a two-action figure set, and the reason I say it's a meme is because one of the Doctors has a half-tuck shirt, looking very Nathan Drake-ish from Uncharted. And it's a fantastic set of 5-inch action figures, so I think it should go pretty well.
Sure, you give out the dolls when we can't win. That's awesome.
That's
thanks,
right.
Dolly.
Yeah, so... I'm
totally ready to just, like, try to stomp these two into the dust.
We are now...
I'm not going to be Justin at anything else ever again in life, so let's do
you're
this.
You're very welcome now.
The guy I tried to get a job from for the past, like, 6 months, I'm just going to work out all that rage back against him.
I couldn't afford you, I told do that.
So the way we're going to run the trivia, as everybody's been alluding to, is from here on out we're going to try having the guests on the show beat our hosts. So in this case, Justin and Sydney are going to try and they're going to challenge and hopefully try and beat Stephen and Sean into submission to win these prizes. So it's going to be the first person to 10 points wins the contest. And should it be Justin and Sydney, they will win the prize. I will
no cheating there, Justin. I know you're a world-class Googler.
There will not be half points this time, Sean, so there won't be any
the bane loss of my existence.
The bane of your existence. And I'm going to focus on the episodes this season that I think maybe a couple of ones we've talked about. So,
truth.
And I'm going to ask all of you to answer
inside jokes.
Justin and Sydney, you guys kind of get you guys get to answer together, and everybody who answers correctly gets a point. Everybody who answers incorrectly gets nothing. So,
okay, so it's not a timed thing.
No, it's not a timed thing. This is going to be there's no timey-wimey thing. It's the first.
Yes! Yes!
The first to 10 points. The first to 10 points wins. So it could be really quick with 10 questions, or it could go 50 questions. I'm going to drop an easy one for you guys.
Are we just shouting it out? I might have missed that.
What's that?
Like we always do, we just shout out the answer? Is that?
I'll ask you each. You can shout it out. Like I said,
we'll be able to copy if we
can copy. Copy just, paste. And then whoever gets right is going to get a point. So, the first question is from episode 1 of this season. What does Canton Everett?
Oh fuck!
What does Canton Everett Delaware III bring with him when he arrives in the Utah desert?
That'd be gasoline.
Steven?
Gasoline. Yeah.
Justin and Sydney.
Gasoline.
Wait, what the hell's happening here?
Yeah, this is the worst idea we've ever had.
I'm trying to make it easy for the guests, guys.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Jesus. The guests... never mind. All right, next question.
I'm sorry that I'm so competitive.
Yeah.
It's all I have, Dolly.
He can't have his win.
First.
Next question. The Doctor believes in episode 9, the Doctor believes that George has which phobia? Pantophobia, pathophobia, or pantophobia?
Pantophobia.
Pantophobia. Steven?
Pantophobia.
Pantophobia. Sean?
Pantophobia.
You are all wrong.
Damn it!
It's not pantophobia.
Wait, does Sydney not get to say one?
Sydney and Justin are answering together.
Oh, okay.
It is pantophobia.
They're married or something.
So, yeah, something.
That's what I said.
You said pantophobia.
Woman, you are a physician. Chime in.
We don't talk about pantophobia a lot.
Yeah. The next question is Let's also do one that we kind of referred to, which was the episode 8, the mid-season premiere, Let's Kill Hilter.
Let's kill Trisha Helfer.
Let's kill somebody.
Who directed this episode? Was it Nick Curran, Richard Senior, or Richard Clark? Steven.
Nick Curran.
Sean.
Richard Clark.
Justin and Sydney.
Richard Senior.
You guys have it correct. It was Richard Senior.
I hate this game. This is bullshit.
I knew it.
Oh, beautiful.
Was
beautiful.
Was that just a total out of the blue guess, or did you? Or was
no, I paid pretty close attention.
Nailed it.
He's got Wikipedia up right now, as a matter of fact.
Son of a
bitch. I'm not cheating. I wouldn't let him. Don't worry.
In episode 9, Night Terrors, what don't Amy and Rory find in the dollhouse? A fake clock, a plastic eye, or a wooden pan? Steven.
What don't they find?
What don't they find in the dollhouse?
Stumped him.
A fake...
A wooden Ooh. Pan, I guess. Wait. Cause
That's you.
A fake clock, a plastic eye, or a wooden pan?
Oh, plastic eye.
Sean.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Justin, you want to go next?
I'm going to say plastic eye.
Okay.
Sean?
I'm going to say the clock.
It was the plastic eye. They do not find a plastic eye in the dollhouse.
They find a glass eye.
They find a glass eye. They find the plastic eye elsewhere.
I heard that and I was like, it was about 10 seconds there where I was just like, what's going on? And then I realized, oh no, Dally's just a bastard.
You sneaky bastard.
Again, on Night Terrors, because I'm really liking this episode, and because the quiz that I have up has all these questions here. What bedtime story did the Doctor used to like when he was George's age? Was it 1, Prisoner Zero and the Seven Keys to Doomsday? 2, Snow White and the Seven Daleks? Or 3, The Three Little Santarans? Justin and Sydney. Prisoner Zero and the Seven Keys to Doomsday, Snow White and the Seven Daleks, or the Three Little Santarans?
The Three Little Santarans.
Sean?
Yeah, Santarans.
Steven. Wait,
is this the one that he did like?
Which one did he used to like when he was George's age?
Okay, Three Little Santarans.
You guys are all right. You guys all got it.
Woo!
Steven's so scared of your phrasing. He's like, wait, what? Did they?
Yeah,
did
I know.
They?
I was just like, wait, was it 4 Little Santarans?
All right, and the next question.
I think we might have lost Sean again.
I'm right here.
Maybe not. Well, I thought it, the signal got so clear there for a second that I...
The only thing I'm losing at is this game.
correct me if I'm wrong, but we cannot win, can we?
No, you cannot win. Your goal is to try to make sure Justin does not. Here's an easy one. Where does Rory put Hitler? In the TARDIS, in the cupboard, or in the Justice Department vehicle?
What?
Who first?
Where does Rory put Hitler?
No, who goes first?
Oh,
who goes first?
Anybody. Well, Steven.
You changed the rules on me. the cupboard.
Sean.
Cupboard.
Justin.
Cupboard.
Cupboard.
Excellent. Kay. Everybody gets it correct. So that was an easy one. I was trying to get you guys to all get a point.
Sean, I think we're doing this wrong. What we should probably be doing is like trying to make them think that it's the wrong answer. Of course, now that I realize I've just said that, like I've totally ruined that strategy.
Well, that and it keeps changing the pace of like the order of who answers. I don't.
Yeah.
If they answer before me, I can't trick them up.
Yeah.
They'll answer like, ha. I mean, oh, okay, hey.
Oh, your guys' goodness. Game, we're just playing.
Yes.
So are we. We don't even know what we're doing. This is a professional podcast, in case you didn't know.
Next question. How many residents are there in episode 10? How many residents are there in the Two Streams facility? Is there 20,000, 30,000, or 40,000?
Who goes first?
Sean. How many residents are in the Two Streams facility? 20,000, 30,000, or 40,000?
I'm going to say 40.
Steven?
30.
Justin and Sydney?
40,000.
40,000 is the correct answer.
Balls.
Damn Justin it, Steven.
And Sydney have 6 points. Sean has 4 points. Steven has 4 points.
You know what, Dolly? Next week, we're going to – before the next episode, we're going to sit down, me and you, and we're going to write some goddamn game show rules, some yeah, real goddamn game show rules.
Next question from episode 8. What does Mel's – you guys remember Mel's, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
What does Mel's tell Rory she's focusing on right before she regenerates? Is it A, the pearly whites, 2, curly locks, or C, a dress size? I'm going to go with Justin. Justin is
C.
Dress size.
Dress size. Sean.
Dress size.
Steven.
Dress size.
You are all correct. It was a dress size. Wow. I did not know that one. you guys.
Shut up. Yeah. I remember that whole line word for word, actually. I was going to say it, and then I realized I would have been quoting a girl, and that would have been weird. Go ahead.
next question.
What?
Nothing.
In episode 9, Night Terrors, what is the name of Alex and Claire's landlord? Is it Jim Purcell, Jim Purnell, or Jim Pulbell?
Jesus, what?
What is who is Alex and Claire's landlord? Jim Purcell, Jim Purnell, Jim Pulbell. Steven.
Purcell.
Sean.
I don't even know that. Howard Cassell? Who? I don't. What?
Just answer the question, Sean.
The first one.
All right, Justin.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Purcell.
You guys are correct. It is Purcell. You each get a wonderful point.
How many points are we up to now?
You guys are up to 8, and Sean and Steven are up to 6. So you are 2 points away from winning this lovely set of.
I'm so excited.
I'm more excited.
Yeah, you sound it. He's just like, yeah, this sounds great.
Yeah,
I'm having fun.
This is going to be a good...
I just know she'll never let me live it down if I don't win it, so...
No, I'll be so mad.
Just to prove his manhood.
Right, exactly.
This is his 2,000 years. The Centaurian.
The true Centaurian. There you go. You waited 20,000 seconds for my next
one day meet you guys on the field of battle.
out of the top 10 planets, what is... Appalachia's ranking? Is it number 10, number 6, or number 2? Sean.
6.
Justin.
2.
2.
Steven.
2.
The correct answer is 2.
Ah, damn.
Appalachia was the second best, but the doctor says it's actually the best because obviously the touristy one is the one that I was going to go to. So this one had the mirrored mountains, I think they said.
Oh, you guys paying attention?
This could be the final question.
Oh.
So let's. I'm going to make it a little bit more difficult. For.
Wait, more difficult than Purcell, Purdell, or Purnell?
Yeah,
exactly. Cosell.
What was the name of the key grip in episode 10 of. No. Which. In episode 10. Which entertainment zone was not offered to Amy upon her check-in? Was it 1, the mountain zone, 2, the beach zone, or 3, the roller coaster zone? Let's start with Steven on this one.
Roller coaster zone.
Justin.
Beach zone.
Sean.
Yeah, beach zone.
The correct answer was beach zone, which means that Justin and Sydney win the awesome prize.
I just want to point out that I totally misinterpreted what the question was that you were asking.
I'd like to point out that my teammate wasn't paying attention to anything that we asked him today. Also, we're playing with combined score, right? So we beat them 4 points ago?
I don't think it works like that, but I do think that it works.
You don't even know how it works.
We should have changed the way this is played every week, but... We're getting there eventually. I should probably prepare these trivia questions well.
You should probably listen
to an episode. The questions aren't the issue.
You should probably listen to an episode of the hit new podcast game show with a Q and maybe maybe learn yourself something.
Learn myself something. I am going to learn myself that this is the end of the podcast.
Oh.
When can we expect our action figures, sir?
The action figures will.
Justin got rough with you there.
Sir.
You know what?
Well, again, this is a professional podcast. He has everything to know when he's going to get his Doctor Who toys.
How about we do something a little... That's true, yeah.
God help you if it takes 2 weeks, Dolly.
Amazon.
Have Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, since Amazon Prime.
It's been 2 weeks since you shipped my prize, and I still haven't seen it.
I think yours are shipping from like Tanzania or something, where Tanzanite is made.
Oh God, those poor little slave kids.
You know what? Before we do sign off, I'd like to offer this same set of action figures to one lucky listener of the podcast.
Oh, you mean the listeners that never enter our stupid contest?
The listeners that never enter the stupid contest, yet we give away games and books and comics and posters every week.
And let's be clear here. Like the Lonely TARDIS is like the most popular thing on the site.
It's the most popular thing on our gaming focused website. So much so that we had to change the focus of our website.
You're welcome, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sean. It was all you're doing. So I'm going to I'm just going to say since we
He doesn't know what he's going to say.
No, we just got finished speaking about the God Complex. To the commenters, what is your worst fear? And why don't you list that in the comments of this wonderful podcast? And one lucky person will win a set of these two action figures. So what is your worst fear?
Are we just choosing them at random, or are we going like by best fear or most embarrassing fear?
I think we're gonna go random this time. We'll make sure that it's a good one. That they have to qualify. They can't say like
clowns,
coneheads. Although that is my brother's worst fear. So
coneheads?
Yeah, coneheads?
Yeah,
it's like the film?
Time. Like the movie, yeah. He's terrified of coneheads. Well, dude, they speak in a monotone voice. They may be worse than Centaurans. They're pre-evolved Centaurans is what it is.
Oh no.
On that note, let's end this episode of The Lonely TARDIS. Justin and Sydney, I really want to thank you guys for being on this episode. You guys have been a total joy to have on. And you know what? We are going to have you guys back. When can we come back?
That's the question.
when can we come back?
Listen to this guy.
He wants to win more action figures.
I have no one to talk about Doctor Who with. The two of us have no one to talk about.
And Justin's goal is just to be continuously podcasting 24 hours a day.
Never not podcasting. Sleep. That's me.
Even podcasting asleep.
Can we give all of our plugs?
Yes. So that's the next portion. Our plugs. Justin and Sydney, you guys just started a wonderful wonderful podcast.
We have our own podcast. It's called Losing the Sheen, and it's about – you can find it at Losing the Sheen on Twitter. It's a 2.5-minute fan cast. It's not on iTunes yet, but it probably will be soon. Check it totally out.
I just lose my shit when you say it's a 2.5-minute fan cast. Like not
It really is a 2.5-minute fan cast.
From the perspective of a couple who just started watching 2.5 Men last night.
Yeah. That's our 2.5-minute podcast.
My only question is how you do it.
It's just really funny.
I haven't even listened to the podcast yet, and already your podcast has made me laugh more than anything else this week.
More than this podcast, probably. Where else can we find you wonderful couple?
I host an advice show called My Brother and Me. That's at mbmbam.com, and I'm also the managing editor of joystickwithaq.com, so you can come there and read things and listen to things. We also do a trivia podcast. Sydney?
And I'm a doctor. Not the doctor, just a doctor.
So if you're
if you get sick and you go to a hospital.
Right. So if you get sick, then I'll be there.
If your shit's busted down.
That's what
if
I
your
do.
Shit's fucked up, you come to a hospital. Come to the H-spital. Sydney's going to take fish you up.
Hospital. At
to be fair.
Medical
to be fair,
center.
You should probably change that from your business card. You should probably remove if your shit's busted up.
If your shit's all busted up, just come check
Sydney's
it out.
Sydney's hospital used to be on the moon, but then they got teleported back down to Earth.
Platooned of dude upon the moon.
Oh, goodness. Sean, where can we find you, buddy?
After that? Really? I have to follow that? I just have one thing. It's a Twitter handle. I don't even – all right. Well, when I'm not on here – I'm waiting to be on here, and when I'm not doing that, you can find me on Twitter. It's at Sean Noren, SHAUNNORTON.
And Steven.
You can find me at Steven Strom on Twitter. That's StevenStrom. I don't go in for that PH bullshit. Also, you can find me. I write for sidequesting.com, although I did just find out today that I apparently have no title at sidequesting.com.
we have to rectify that.
Yeah, even though I'm probably the second.
I like Mister.
We have Mr. Speedos, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Justin McElroy, and she's at Sydney, S-Y-D-N-E-E, McElroy, M-C-E-L-R-O-Y.
Why would anybody want to follow me?
Yeah, I don't know. Ask the
thousands. Hey, she brings the lulls. She brings them. She brings the laughs.
I just puked up a little bit of the steak I ate at Applebee's. She's right here.
He really did it. Oh,
oh
God.
Okay.
And I'm Dan Lebowski.
This is,
and
this is marriage, in case you were wondering.
Hey, Steven, this is what you're missing out on. This is that Amy and Roy connection. Merlot-soaked Applebee's steak up in front of her. The girl who waited for him to puke up Applebee's steak.
On the giant microphone. In front of hundreds of listeners. Hundreds of listeners. I think you killed him.
And with that, this has been The Lonely TARDIS, episode 5.
Hopefully you'll find me on a better website soon.
Poor Dolly. Dolly gets in like 5 words, doesn't even get his own sign off.
At Cool Rats.
Is that with a C?
I'll be quitting sidequesting.com soon to try and regain some dignity.
See you guys. Adios.
Maybe we should intro it with a little bit of the kind of – since you guys have power through it, maybe you could talk a little bit about your favorite episodes before we get all caught up.
That'll be good. Well, let me
– it sounds like we could – oh, sorry.
No, that sounds actually pretty – that sounds pretty, like a really good plan there.
Do I sound okay? Because I'm recording off of my iPad. I can move to a better
I'm
setup
recording off of my iPad.
My iPad 2 with the smart cover, and it's in green so that you can –
Do you have
a
microphone on? Are you – I mean, like, do you have a microphone plugged in?
Nope, it's just the regular.
I thought this was like an all-pro. Dolly promised me an all-pro production.
Yeah, I do have
compared
a
to what?
Microphone and everything, but I have roommates as well, so, and my computer is in the main living area, and I get pretty loud on some of these episodes.
Justin, we do have Sean on the program, so that kind of negates any all-pro.
Whatever, Sean's a pro.
I don't know how. I'm. Wait a minute.
Sean's on the show on vacation.
On vacation.
That's correct. That is
everything rests with you, Sean.
How dare you?
All right,
you guys will have to come on Cindy and my Downton Abbey podcast that we're getting together.
You know what? I'm actually going to mention that because I listened to it yesterday and it was really good. I got to say, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, really. You mean our 2.5 Men
yes.
podcast?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll have to. Yeah.
How many do you have?
What the fuck?
We don't. The Downton Abbey one is okay. Preposterously, the Downton Abbey one is fake. The 2.5 Men one is real.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how that ended up happening.
So many podcasts.
Justin McElroy is the Leo Laporte of just weird podcasts.
I don't know what that is because I'm a baby.
Yeah, because you're a baby. All right, and I'm gonna count us in. Clear your throats. What did Bob Ball teach us, Steven? Were you there when Bob was teaching us all those? Stuff.
I can bring back this old classic.
We'll save that for the side quest.
Oh, okay.
And 3, 2, 1.